Welcome to Homefront on Missouri Grassroots Radio. I'm Cynthia Davis, your host. As a writer, speaker, and former legislator, we discuss limiting government, fiscal responsibility, and fair taxation. I'm a mother of seven and a wife of one for over three decades, so I bring you my personal experience. And now it's time for Homefront with Cynthia Davis. Welcome to another edition of Homefront. Today we have David Court with us. He has a show as well called The Hour of Truth. In this hour, Dave exposes the media lies, hunts the rhinos, and vets any candidate who calls himself a conservative to get right to the truth. Along with a strong libertarian bent, Dave is truly about less government and more individual liberty. So, Dave, thank you for joining us on our show today.
Thanks for having me, Cynthia. I enjoy your show a lot, but all the time.
It's mutual. You know, it takes one to know one, and how else are we going to fix the country? So, today we're going to talk about the different ideas floating around. We have a lot of problems going on. If anybody has been watching the news, the Constitution has never been at a lower point in this country. So let me read to you Article 5 of the Constitution and then have you comment on it. It says this: "The Congress, whenever two-thirds of both houses shall deem it necessary, shall propose amendments to this Constitution, or on the application of the legislatures of two-thirds of the several states, shall call a convention for proposing amendments, which in either case shall be valid to all intents and purposes as part of this Constitution. When ratified by the legislatures of three-fourths of the states, or by conventions in three-fourths thereof, as the one or the other mode of ratification may be proposed by the Congress." So, Dave, explain to us, what does this mean?
Well, what it means, Cynthia, is that there are two ways. Now, historically, the way we've done amendments, and amending the Constitution is not a new concept. It's been done many times in the past. And the established way, or the way it's always been done in the past, is the Congress, by a supermajority, proposes an amendment to the Constitution. Now, that's just a proposal, because the states still own the Constitution. So that proposed amendment then has to go out to the states, and three-fourths of the states, or 38 states, have to ratify or say yes to that amendment. And at that point, it becomes a part of the Constitution. Now, the founders put a second way we can amend the Constitution, or propose an amendment to the Constitution, and that is by a meeting of the states. The states can have a meeting, a convention, send delegates, and that convention can propose amendments, which would then go out to the states as though they had been proposed the other way, and the states still would have to ratify them.
Okay, so
they would become part of the Constitution.
Okay, there are two ways to amend the Constitution. One is through Congress, and the other way is by having the state legislatures say, we're going to change it. And what you're saying is, we've never done it through the vehicle of using the states. We've only had amendments proposed by the Congress. Is that what you're saying?
That's what I'm saying. But what is important to remember about that, too, is that we are saying, whether the Congress does it, or whether the convention of the states does it, these are proposed amendments. Nothing gets amended. The Constitution doesn't get changed until the then proposed amendment goes out to the 50 states, and at least 38 states say yes.
The Congress proposed the income tax amendment. What duped a number of states into going for that thing?
Well, again, that's a whole different a different thing we could spend a whole nother hour on sometime, and that is that the Congress convinced the states over a long period of time, and they even used several Walt Disney cartoons to do it, if you'll remember your history, that they needed more money for the war, and that they convinced the states that this was only a tax on rich people. And at the very beginning it was. At the very beginning you had to make what in today's dollars would be $180,000 a year before you paid any income tax. And of course as soon as that was passed by the states, that number crept down and down and down and down to where now you pay an income tax basically on your minimum wage.
Okay, so what you're saying is that if the states propose amendments this time, then the states aren't going to be as stupid as they were last time?
Well, I say no, because remember, the states, and of course they have to choose their delegates wisely, but I think at this time in history is perfect for this thing, because the states are going to have a righteously jealous zeal for state sovereignty. Every state, including the most liberal states like California, is tired of being bankrupted by the federal government, of having the federal government tell them they have to pay for this, they have to do that, when the citizens in their states clearly don't want to.
And I've heard the debates on both sides of the issue, and I believe the best way to explain the difference between where people divide philosophically is those who believe that the states are smart enough to know how to handle this are in favor of the convention. And those who think the states are not very smart are opposed to the convention. Is that what you're seeing as well?
Well, that's kind of what I'm seeing. And I really lay somewhere in the middle myself. I mean, I'm strongly in favor of the convention, but I again fall back on this ratification process. You know, if my friends on the left, they want gun control, they want the federal government to say that gay people can get married, they want the federal government to say that abortion's okay wherever you go, whenever you want it, and so there may come some amendments like that proposed out of this convention. My friends on the right, they want the federal government to say nobody can have an abortion. They want the federal government to say no gays can get married. They want the federal government to install a prayer in public schools. And we might get some things like that out, but I fall back to this 13 states, Cynthia, can say no. 13 states can say no go, and whatever it is a no-go. So I think at this particular time in history, the odds are in our favor, more than ever before, that in the ratification process, no matter what comes out of this convention as a proposal, in the ratification process, when the proposed amendment goes to state houses like the ones we have in Jefferson City and gets debated there, where this state decides whether we're going to say yes or no to that specific amendment, I think history is on our side. Right now, we're at a tilting point in history where states are fed up with the federal government, and I don't see any way to come out of this without less federal government and more state sovereignty.
Okay, so just to get the verbiage correct, there are people calling it a constitutional convention, and there are other people calling it an Article 5 convention. What are you calling it, and what is the difference between those two conventions?
Well, I've gotten caught up in the nomenclature of it, depending on who I'm talking to, but I called it an amendment convention. There is no authorization to come out of this thing with an entirely new constitution. There is nothing going to come out of this thing but proposals for amendments to the Constitution. And those proposals are nothing but proposals until 38 states accept them exactly the way they're worded coming out of the convention.
38 states say, yes, I go with that, and then that
Correct.
Does it. How many states approved of the income tax? In the 16th Amendment?
I don't remember. Now, there were only 48 states at the time. So it would have taken 37 states to say yes. And again, remember, you're living in a totally different time. You're living in a very, the progressive era was just catching on. You were in the middle of a world war. The government was able to convince people that it needed money for war. You had Rita the Riveter. You had Uncle Sam Wants You. You had all of this going on at that time. And you had a bill being sold to the states that was a tax the rich bill. Did some things get pulled over on the states? Yes. Did some things get pulled over on the states with the 17th? Yes. With the 14th? Yes. Have the states ratified bad amendments? Yes. We just listed three of them. Are we at a point in history now, I ask myself, when states are fed up enough that you could not get 38 states to hand more power to the federal government? I think anyone would have to answer yes to that. I think the states are sufficiently fed up with the federal government that this is the prime time in history to just say no.
Okay, so you're saying first that the Constitutional Convention is the same thing as an Article 5 convention?
You can call it what you want. I mean, I think to call it a constitutional convention is probably the worst misnomer you can do, because that might leave someone with the impression that they would be writing a new constitution, as they did in the Constitutional Convention in Philadelphia. Now, you got to remember, you do have to remember, when you're arguing this with folks, that you're going to hear that some fellows went to Philadelphia and that they were supposed to restructure the Articles of Confederation to make them work better, and they ended up scrapping the entire Articles of Confederation and coming away with an entirely new constitution. Why couldn't that happen here? Well, in the first place, there was no rule set in the Articles of Confederation as to how they were to be amended. In the second place, 10 of the 13 states authorized their delegates at that convention to scrap the articles and write a new constitution. So you already had 10 of 13 states that had authorized delegates to write an entirely new constitution. Are 38 states going to send delegates to this convention with the authorization to write a new constitution? No, that isn't going to happen. Secondly, there is built into our constitution in Article 5 this methodology for amending, not replacing, the constitution. That wasn't there at the original convention.
Okay, so what's the worst possible outcome that could happen if we had an Article 5 convention?
The worst possible outcome, from our perspective, is you could come out with 100 proposed amendments, 75 or 90 even of which are the federal government will allow gay marriage. The federal government will allow abortion. The federal government will pay for abortion. The federal government will require everyone to learn the Communist Manifesto. Nobody can have a gun. The worst case scenario is you could come out with 95 of 100 amendments looking like that. That is the absolute worst case scenario, and remembering that now these are just proposals. Now you have to get 38 states to take that amendment back to their state house, debate it in their state house, and have the representatives of the people of that state 38 times accept that amendment. It's a long process. The Equal Rights Amendment would which was very, very popular at the time, if you remember.
Yes, people thought it was three cheers for the ladies. They thought if we vote for equal rights, it's just a feel-good thing for the ladies to feel like they're popular and loved and supported.
And wasn't that a time in history when the feminist movement was at its peak? Wasn't that a time in history when progressivism was really, really on the rise? Wasn't that a time in history when you think that would have been a nailed shut coffin? But no, they couldn't even get that through 38 states.
So why do we need to have a convention? Could we not have the states, without the authorization of the Constitution, get together and the leadership of each state? Let's say you could find, what if we had 38 great states, okay? Could they not just meet casually on their own and come up with some ideas that they like and unify the language and then get their states to ratify that? Would that not work?
I think it could. I think that could be construed as a convention of the states. I don't know how that would, I don't know how that would stand up as a, the language of Article 5 is specific. There has to be a convention of the states. Now, would the states, say you got 39, let's make the math easy. Let's say you've got 40 states together and they all said, well, would the 10 states who didn't get on board with that be able to later say, we didn't have a convention, we never had a voice in this, we didn't even get to be part of the debate? I think it's sounder if we just follow what the founders gave us. I mean, they gave us this for a specific purpose. They gave us this avenue specifically, and they said so in words, specifically so that the states had an avenue when the Congress got so powerful that there was no way for the states to fix it anymore. They gave us this avenue for exactly this time in history.
You know, I think you're giving too much credit to the elected officials, having been an elected official.
Well, Cynthia, that's the beauty of it. The elected officials have nothing to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing the elected officials have to do with it is 34 states have to say, we demand a convention. And if 34 states say that, there's going to be a convention. All 50 states are going to be invited. There's going to be debate. States are going to be equally represented. The California is not going to have more representation than New Hampshire. And there's going to be a debate. And anything that they come out of this with as a proposed amendment would go to the 50 states, and 38 have to say yes. Our elected officials don't even have a say in it.
Hi friends, do you like what you're hearing? Then go to my website. It's CynthiaDavis.net and sign up for my newsletter. You'll get all this information and more when you sign up for my email reminding you of when you'll hear another podcast and letting you know what's coming up next. Besides, we always have a little bit of humor at the end, so go to CynthiaDavis.net and stay in the loop. For those of you who don't like email, go to my Facebook page. It's called Homefront with Cynthia Davis. And make sure you click the like button. That way, you'll have a convenient way to see what we're doing and to get the word when another podcast is released. That's Homefront with Cynthia Davis on Facebook. My website is CynthiaDavis.net. That's where we keep all our good stuff. So if you want to get our newsletter and find more podcasts, go to CynthiaDavis.net. Hey, let's stay in touch. Let me ask you this. I write a newsletter every week called, you know, that we still do a newsletter. I've done it since I was in the Capitol. And this week I wrote on Boeing and the sweetheart deal that the states are all clamoring to put together to make sure Boeing will stay in their state or expand in their state. And I received this email back in response. I'm going to read it to you. This constituent wrote me, "Great article, Cynthia. I am a believer and follower of the Constitution!" Exclamation mark. "However, I heard one state rep say the Constitution doesn't feed the people. I do realize that it is a tough situation for the state reps that have to decide on jobs versus the Constitution. How does one who voted against Boeing and stood for the Constitution, like Paul Kertman, explain their choice to these constituents who wanted jobs? And why doesn't the Constitution trump their votes? I can't believe there are people who override the Constitution. Thanks, Cynthia. Just curious." Now, there are a number of questions that this email raises. The first one, let me straighten out the record. My constituent didn't read the voting record correctly because Paul Kertman voted against the Constitution and for the government frou-frou. He later, somebody said that he retracted his vote, and you can't retract your vote, by the way. Once your vote is permanent, it is an indelible record that stays with you forever. But hearsay was that he told his constituent that he was not in the chambers while the debate happened or the vote began, and he ran into the chambers as they were voting, quickly pressed the yes button, and was not aware of what he was voting for. We might have Paul Kertman on the show sometime to try and straighten out what happened there. I'm just repeating to you what was told to me. But nevertheless, how, David, did we get into a situation in our country where some people think now they have to pick between the Constitution or the people? This is so offensive, hearing somebody say the Constitution doesn't feed people. Oh, yes, it does. The Constitution gives you the right to feed yourself, buddy. So anyway, Dave, please respond to that.
Well, no, I agree with you. I mean, I won't argue with a single thing you said. There's not any country in the world that allows people to prosper the way the United States of America does when the United States of America is being run in accordance with the Constitution. There is no other system other than the free market capitalist system as defined by the Constitution of the United States, with the government out of the way of everything, that allows people to pursue their dreams, to manage their own property, to progress, to prosper, to define their own future.
Well, we're at a point now where there are legislators who intentionally and willfully were aware that they were going against the Constitution, but they said, yeah, but it's more important to give the frou-frous to Boeing. I don't care what the Constitution says. When we get to that point, we're in deep trouble. And that is from a state of Missouri, which has a majority of Republicans in control. Now, if the Republicans are willfully and knowingly going against the Constitution, and by the way, there are several points where the Boeing bill did offend the Missouri Constitution. One is that we have a law that says you cannot create a law just for one industry. And they did.
Well, yeah. That's more than a law. That is written words in the Constitution. Yeah.
Yes. And the other thing is you should not be funneling taxpayer dollars toward one, well, I'll call it a campaign donor. I'm sorry to say this, and it might offend some, but here's the experiment. I encourage my listeners to study who gets campaign donations from their vote. And even though it may be difficult to trace, and this is where you get into the advanced level of campaign donation tracing, the donations to the people who voted yes, may not come directly from Boeing. They may come directly from a lobbying firm that represents Boeing. So that's how this stuff happens. And I guarantee you that that was a factor. I remember one time when I was went to my AT&T lobbyist before a campaign, and I asked him, hey, can you give me $500? Because you always give me $500. My lobbyist friend told me no. And I said, really? Oh, I'm shocked. You've never turned me down before. And he said, well, that vote we took a few months ago on the AT&T bill and you voted the wrong way, that cost you. Now, my point is, I don't expect people to donate to candidates who don't support their issues, but at the same time, I can testify firsthand that that is part of the cost that is calculated by the legislators when they ring the bell and open the board. It doesn't take too many of those experiences before we all can see what is going on here. So I'm just saying that if we're going to get control of the situation, we need to first decide in our own hearts what is the most important thing to me, campaign donations or being constitutional.
What you say is all totally true and relevant to what we're talking about, because there are several things we need to do to fix that. The first thing is, and quite importantly, is term limits on federal legislators. That way, the next election at some point, they know, is not important. They know that at some time in the very near future, they've got to go back out into the economy they're creating and earn a living. Term limits on federal legislators is one of the things that we've got to have. A balanced budget is one thing that we've got to have. And one of the things we've got to have to take money out of politics, in my mind, is an elimination of the income tax and an institution of a fair tax. Another thing we have to have in my mind to do away with what you just talked about is going back to the way the Constitution was written, where the Senate side of the equation is actually a representation of the state of Missouri rather than a representation of the people. We the people, we have our representatives on the other side of the Capitol, in the House of Representatives. We have direct representation of we the people, of you and me, in very small districts in the House of Representatives. If anyone listening isn't familiar with what the original Constitution said, the Senate represented the state of Missouri. Two senators were elected to the Senate by the legislature of the state of Missouri, and they went up there with not to represent you and me individually, but to represent the interests of the state of Missouri. That's why there's two for every state, regardless of its size, representing the interest of that state. Now, the 17th Amendment did away with that and said we all elect Claire and we all elect Roy. If it were that way, if it were that way that the senator represented the state of Missouri at the behest of the legislature of the state of Missouri and was there to represent the interests of the state of Missouri, we wouldn't have either Roy Blunt or Claire McCaskill up there because they clearly don't represent the interests of the state of Missouri.
Have you studied the reason the 17th Amendment was put into the Constitution?
I have not.
Well, what I have researched is that there were problems because some states were not represented because the gridlock in the state prevented the legislature from agreeing on who will be the senator to represent them.
If that state can't figure out how to get their interests represented in Washington, D.C., so, then they've got a problem.
Right, because the natural consequence to that is now your state won't be represented. So you want to be like a two-year-old having a temper tantrum, and meanwhile your state is not having any representation because you can't agree. I don't think that sounds like a very mature attitude. Maybe if we're working with grade schoolers, we can understand. This is the difficult problem, is we're dealing with grown adults, and unfortunately, we've trashed up the country so bad. I'm concerned that if we had a constitutional convention or an Article 5 convention, that we would not find enough mature adults who could go to that convention and find any real meaningful progress. I don't know how the convention would produce more than gridlock if you look at what we're seeing. And worse than gridlock, we are seeing a bipartisan cooperation in Washington, D.C. between Republicans and Democrats. Every time they have a cap on the budget, on the debt ceiling, every time they have a debate over shall we limit spending, yes or no, they say no. Every time they say shall we control illegal immigration, yes or no, they say no. The majority of Congress is against the people. I don't know how we can be strong as a country if we can't even be smart enough to elect people who can truly represent us. Or maybe the scary part is they do represent us. What kind of implications does that have for our future?
Well, the fact of the matter, Cynthia, is they do not. We can speak from the experience here in Missouri that they do not represent us. I mean, I made this statement some time ago. We sitting here in Missouri, we can't get all grumbly with the likes of Nancy Pelosi for Obamacare, okay? Because it's entirely likely that given where Nancy Pelosi's from, that she is representing the people of her district when she votes in favor of Obamacare. All right, but we can certainly get angry with Roy Blunt and with Claire McCaskill, because twice now, the people of the state of Missouri have told them hell no on Obamacare.
Oops, Dave, we don't use those words on my show.
No, twice now, the people of the state of Missouri have said no to Claire McCaskill and Roy Blunt on Obamacare, and they've ignored us. So you're right. So another thing that we need then, to get back to what I was talking about, to cure the problems, is a method for the state to recall federal legislators. We need term limits on Supreme Court justices to make this system better. We need a balanced budget to make this system better. And everything that I've talked about here that we need to do to fix the situation that you've just defined requires a constitutional amendment. And none of them are constitutional amendments that we're going to get out of the Congress.
On the positive side of the Article 5 Convention, I've heard that if the states would agree to repeal Obamacare, we could say checkmate to Congress, it would be repealed. If the states said to Congress, we're going to put a spending cap on you, that's another checkmate. The Congress would have a spending cap with or without all their silly philandering over the debt limit bill. That's silly. I mean, we're watching them every year put on drama and theater for the nation to watch, and we're getting the shiest every time. We think we're close, and you know what? They're mocking us. The Congress in Washington, D.C. is laughing all the way to their cocktail parties because their motivation is not the same as most of ours, and yet we're powerless. You know, in baseball, there's a term, tie goes to the runner. And there are cases, many cases, where state and federal laws may clash. And one amendment I've heard that would be positive is saying if there's a tie and state law conflicts with federal law, the state one wins, not the federal law. So that's kind of cool. And then the other one is the Commerce Clause. Commerce Clause was designed to regulate commerce between the states. And Congress has turned that into anything, anything you can imagine is now covered under Commerce Clause. How'd we get that one so badly messed up? The EPA and the Department of Natural Resources, there's such a gross duplication of services. The Department of Education, what is wrong with these states? Now, see, this is where I'm losing confidence in the idea of a constitutional convention or an Article 5 convention, whatever you want to call it. If the majority of the United States are falling for the Common Core malarkey, how are we going to be confident they won't fall for the next malarkey that comes along?
We're not. But here's what I say, Cynthia, okay?
And my apologies to anybody who's named malarkey. Go ahead.
No, that's all right. Put the battle on the battlefield that it belongs on, okay? Get the federal government out of it. Take the federal government out of the discussion. Put the battle that we want to have, the battle that we're having every day and losing. Let's have a big battle over this at the level where the battle needs to be had. When it all is said and done, and I don't believe we'll lose, but when it's all said and done, if we lose to 38 states, we're lost anyway. But right now, we're lost without the states even having a voice.
Yeah, you're right there. We're not gaining ground. We're losing ground. We're losing it every day. We're losing it for sure every time Congress is in session. If I could show you a line graph, and this is it's a little bit difficult to show you a line graph on the radio, but imagine this picture with me. We got a point A, and it starts up here, and a point B is going down a little bit every year. We have lost freedom. We've lost liberty. We've lost autonomy. We're losing our freedom of speech, for goodness sake. We're losing our freedom of religion. Every day they pass more gun regulations, we're losing the Second Amendment. The amendments are already being mocked by the President of the United States and disregarded, and we feel confident that we have a constitution that is going to be there to protect us. And I'm here to say that it appears like some elected officials have made that constitution irrelevant.
Yes, I mean, people are afraid of constitutional amendments. Well, wake up. The Constitution is being amended every Supreme Court session. The Constitution is being amended every legislative session. The Constitution is being amended with every executive order, and the states aren't even getting a voice. They're not even getting a voice. So get the battle down to the level where the battle belongs. Get it down to the states. Let the states argue it out. Let 38 states say yes or no. 38 states say yes, or 13 states say no. It takes 38 to say yes. It only takes 13 to say no. And Cynthia, you know, there may come a time where on one or two things we just throw up our hands and say, we're lost anyway. If 38 states are willing to accept this amendment, then that issue is lost anyway. But let's win it or lose it down at the state level where we claim we own this country to start with.
So you're saying that the Article 5 convention is for the purpose of creating some debate that's not happening right now?
If nothing else, if not a single amendment comes out of this. You know, I was having this discussion just today with one of the opponents of my position who said, we don't really need to do that. All we need to do is get an amendment, well, kind of what you said, get an amendment that 38 states can agree to, or get an amendment out of the Congress that 38 states can agree to. Well, what better way to do that than to get the 50 states together in one place and have the debate, have the discussion?
Who will the delegates be?
Missouri will decide how it's going to elect its delegate, and they will elect it. I mean, it's not defined. I mean, the state will elect their delegate.
Well, let me tell you what I saw over this redistricting that just happened a couple years ago. Even though Missouri is run by a majority of Republicans, they had some pretty bad decisions. There was a lot of gerrymandering that went on. There was a lot of monkey business. There were childish ideas, and they passed. So my point is that when a non-elected committee gets together and can be dominated by people of one philosophy, even in a conservative state like ours, there really was a poor outcome. What did you think of that?
I say this to that. You are talking about the level of government that we have the most direct control over. If the state of Missouri passes a law that says you can't own a gun that holds more than 7 bullets, okay? I would be opposed to that. But it's the state of Missouri, and we are a sovereign entity, and I could live with that because the state of Missouri is the level of government that we have the most control over, and we can fix that. We can fix that in one election 2 years from now if it's an issue for the people of the state of Missouri. When the people in Washington, D.C., representative of the people of California and the people of New York and the people of Florida, tried to tell me that I can't have a gun that owns more than 7 bullets, regardless of what the people in Jefferson City tell me I can or can't do, I have a real problem with that. Let's get representatives to this convention, and we will. All states will, who care about the sovereignty of the state of Missouri. Then we'll find amendments coming out of this convention that have to do with limiting the federal government and allowing the state of Missouri to be sovereign. However stupid the state of Missouri wants to be, that's up to you and me and the people of the state of Missouri. We're not going to get our way every time, but at least I want to not get my way in a government entity that I am sovereign to in Jefferson City, that I have, you know, that I have more direct control over. I only have to work 100 blocks to replace my state representative. I only have to work 100 square blocks to replace my state representative. It's that simple. We have real direct control over that government, and that government is the one that should be sovereign over me in everything except those powers enumerated to the federal government because they're too big for a state.
Article 5 in the Constitution is relatively short, and
very short, yes.
The reason it was put there is because the founding fathers were concerned that we might have a situation where the states would be blatantly disregarded. Did you study something in the Federalist Papers that addressed this?
Oh, it was the most direct addressing of this comes in Madison's handwritten notes from the convention itself. He took very careful minutes. The Committee on Style, the committee who was actually writing the words for what would eventually become the Constitution, came the next to the last day of the convention with the proposed Constitution. This is what we've been arguing about for 3 months. This is what we've come up with. And they got down to Article 5, and all it said, it left out that second clause. It said that the Constitution could be amended when a supermajority of the Congress, both houses, proposed an amendment to the states, and three-fourths of the states ratified that amendment. Colonel George Mason, bless his little heart, stood up and said, you know, this Leviathan is going to get huge. This federal government is going to suck up the states. And when it does, you've only allowed for the Constitution to be changed by this same power-hungry federal government. We need a clause in there that lets the people circumvent this federal government and change their Constitution. And there was some debate about that, and on the next to the last day of the convention, they jammed in this clause that said the states could demand a convention for the purpose of proposing amendments to the Constitution. And that's where that came from.
Even though the states are the ones who sent their congressional representatives to Washington, D.C.?
Yes, yes. I mean, the Founding Fathers recognized George Washington didn't expect the Constitution to last 10 years.
Why is
he
that?
He thought that the government would give in to tyranny before 10 years was up. George Mason said, this thing is going to get too big. You know, yeah, it's a representative democracy. Yeah, it's got three branches of government, but it's going to run away with itself. It's going to suck up power. It's going to totally consume statehood. We need to put something in here that allows for some point in history for the very people who own this Constitution to reach out and fix it.
So why is it that none of the states have proposed amendments before now? Why have all the amendments been proposed exclusively by Congress?
Well, because it is a long, drawn-out process, and we haven't reached this point in history that we're at right now, Cynthia. And I do believe that I'm not underplaying my hand when I define this as a tilting point, a point where a sufficient number of states are just fed up. We have states going bankrupt because of federal mandates. We have states borrowing money to meet federal mandates. We have states rebelling against federal mandates on gun control, on environmental protections, on federal mandates on education. We have people, large groups of people rebelling against Agenda 21 and all of these federal programs. And we've never had that to this level at any time in history where people and states especially were just overburdened to the point of saying, we've had enough.
Okay, well, let me correct you on just one point there. When you said states are having to borrow money to meet federal mandates, I don't accept that, because that shows mismanagement on their part. That means they're spending some of their dollars on things they ought not to do in the first place. And if they could get their own house in order, then they could still make it work. Not every state has to borrow money to match a federal mandate. Some of the states know how to cut elsewhere. But I do see what you're saying. Obviously, when it comes to fiscal issues, I do not have much compassion for states that have mismanaged their funds. The federal government should not be costing us that much money. So is there some place you recommend that the listeners go to get more information if they'd like to study this issue for themselves?
We do the Article 5 show every week. They can go to start with, go read Article 5 of the United States Constitution. It answers a lot of questions. But you can go to any number of, just Google up, because what I want to be careful of is I want to make sure that everyone who even considers this make sure that they have a clear understanding of both sides of this argument. There are valid sounding points coming from the other side, and I want everyone to, this is not a battle without danger. I would be a fool to say otherwise. It is a battle that needs to be fought, and it needs to be fought at the level where the country is supposed to be owned, at the state level. So what you need to do is just go Google Mike Ferris and Google Mark Levin, And you'll find plenty of information, good, accurate, much more accurately historical information than I have.
I thought you were going to say more historically accurate information than what they're going to hear from me.
No, really. I'm a overnight stalker in a big box store. I'm not a constitutional attorney. I know what I have studied, and I know what I believe, and I know a little bit of history about this, and I've been on the Article 5 bandwagon for a little over 5 years now, so I'm glad Mark Levin and Ferris have finally heard me and brought this thing to national. No, I'm just kidding there, of course. Nobody paid any attention to me, but I'm glad we're finally getting some national traction on this thing, and I'd love to see this. I want to see this debate. I want to see this debate come to fruition. I want to see these things debated, and I don't think that we. I think the very last thing that we, as liberty-loving people, need to do is fear this battle. We've been asking for this, and now to cower from it is the worst thing we can do in my mind.
Well, that's a great word for you. We do need to be brave. It is time to pull up our bootstraps and say, you know what, I'm going to fight with everything in me to keep the country what our founders bled and died for us to have. There is nothing to be accomplished by us rolling over and playing dead. We've been too lazy and we've been too complacent. And as we've been looking the other way, this Congress has trashed and destroyed and messed up so much of our heritage. And we should be angry over that. There's a point where we need to say that is enough. Here's the line, folks. You've gone over it. And you've gone over it one time too many. And now you're going to face some repercussions. So thank you for encouraging my listeners. And David, will you be on the show with us again sometime?
I certainly would love to. You know I love you, Cynthia.
Okay. Sounds good. Thanks much.
Thank you.
This has been another edition of Homefront on Missouri Grassroots Radio. I'm Cynthia Davis and hope you enjoyed our program. Please join us next week when we offer another infusion of truth, honesty, and solutions that will grow people bigger and shrink government smaller. Thank you for joining us. See you next week.